Hi, Bob's here. Actually, no new episode this week either. We had a guest cancel the morning of their interview. And as you know from what I mentioned last time, I've had a bit of a break from recording. This sometimes happens, but normally we have another episode in the can that we can release. Instead, here's another favourite episode from the archive, and I'll be back with a totally new one very soon.
This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps, and each week with an inspiring guest, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. So, here we go. This week, we're talking all about boundaries as a factor in mental health with wonderful repeat guest, Dr. Shana Ali, who is a mental health counsellor, educator, advocate, author, wonderful person who I have had the pleasure of getting to interview three times before, twice as part of our initial COVID-19 coverage back in early 2020. Also, this is particularly good timing talking to Dr. Shana because she has a new book on the way called Designing Healthy Boundaries, A Guide to Embracing Self-Love, Building Better Boundaries, and Protecting Your Peace. If that's not just a wonderfully appealing title and a very practical book, as is, you know, her theme in her writing, really, it's a strong tenet of her work of, okay, here is the, you know, the theories, here is the background on the theme of the book, but also here is how to set it into practice straight away. So I'd encourage you to check that one out if you're intrigued by today's conversation. If you want more Dr. Shana Ali here on the pod, I will link the episode we talked about self-love in the description as well. Would really recommend that one, which I re-listened to actually in preparation for this conversation. It's a really moving conversation, both in the interview, but also the intro that Danielle and I did. It's always surreal to listen back to yourself at different points when you're expressing, you know, vulnerability and difficult things you're going through. And that is one of the nice things I get from this show, is the ability to look back and realise ways in which you've grown in a way that is very publicly documented. And, you know, so that's lovely both on an individual level to be like, oh, I'm doing better than ever, but also to get to reflect again with a repeat guest and, you know, look at ways in which both on our personal mental health journeys and via the lens of our work, we get to constantly re-explore topics and find, in this case, whole new boundaries that we never even thought about. And, you know, this is a theme that I'm really glad to cover because boundaries are something I am now so passionate about. They can be very difficult to set. They can be difficult to wrap your head around. And I mean, even in this conversation, both of us were doing our best to not say the word boundaries every other word because there isn't a huge amount of kind of linguistic crossover of how we can explain this. And indeed, at times there can be a lot of things that are boundaries where we might not even sort of initially see that. And so we get to explore ways in which boundaries go beyond the idea of somebody's overstepped in a way that personally for you makes you uncomfortable. And you feel then additionally uncomfortable in the idea that you need to in some way retaliate to that, that you need to scold that person, or you need to say, no, I have a rule here that you can't say this, or you can't interact with me in this way. And in fact, boundaries are something that we reinforce even subconsciously all the time. You know, I think of one that we've all been more conscious of in the last few years is personal space. The COVID pandemic changed that societal boundary that was built in for a lot of us where, let's say you're walking down the street, there would be a sort of common distance by which people would move around each other so as to not bump into each other. It's not an accident that we're not walking into each other. It's that is a common thing of giving each other space. And then through a period of time when space was even more a thing of safety, that then increased. And so there are ways that both overtly we can enforce that as an example of a boundary of asking someone to give us a bit more space. But then there can also be ways that we enforce it without even thinking of. So if someone gets a bit too close, we might just step back automatically. for example. And I'm slightly rambling here, but the point is, boundaries are wonderful. They can be hard to enforce, and that's why I'm so glad to talk about them today with Dr. Shayna Ali. Wonderful guest, incredible counsellor, and you know, I think I'm reminded of that in this episode as you're here, because I couldn't help but, you know, open up about examples of boundaries in my own life. And I'm not sure on reflection recording this intro if all of them are relatable. You know, some of them are very distinctly me things, but I'm going to justify that by being part of the point that everyone is entitled to different ways to seek comfort and nice, harmonious, healthy relationships. And that's okay, even if some of mine won't make sense to everyone. That is part of the process. But no, do drop me an email via the website, mentalpodcast.ie, if you have any thoughts on boundaries, if there are any of mine that you relate to, or any that have come up in today's conversation that you find tricky. I'd be interested to hear from you. For now, though, we'll get into this conversation with Dr. Shayna in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Hi, I'm Dr. Shayna, and I'm really happy to delve into talking about boundaries today. I think it's really appropriate to think about what boundaries even looks like in my life and what it has looked like in my life throughout time. When I think back to boundaries as a child and the idea of were they present, I think they were absolutely present. But when I kind of jump into the future, and perhaps even right now in the present, I think about how different those boundaries of the past were compared to the boundaries of today. So the boundaries that I experienced previously and how I understood boundaries were rules that were created and in many instances pre-created, already set in stone because people have followed them over time or because there's a certain document or declaration that cites them or that's just how the way things are. Sometimes that was the example I was given when I would kind of push on or inquire about curiously, what are boundaries? So they definitely existed then. I could see their merit and many times they worked for me. But I also struggled, and the more I look back on my mental health journey and understanding how I've healed with anxiety and finding the superpower of self-love, I realized that boundaries were very, very confusing for me because I, on one hand, valued them, and on the other hand, didn't know that they mattered for me to make them and that I could even make them. I came into the work of self-love, working as a therapist and as an educator and a mental health advocate. And within the last 5 years or so, I've noticed people work really hard, courageously on their self-love and still get stumped in this aspect of self-respect. And the more I started to look at that as a therapist, as a person, as an educator, I realized it had to do with boundaries. And it was from that that I realized that many of us value boundaries as a concept, but have no idea where to start in terms of like putting them into our life, where they're needed, why they're needed, how to really fortify them. So that's really where the book idea came out of.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. And I've got already so much to pick up on that. I loved how you contrasted the idea of boundaries and rules. That's so interesting because I'm, you know, a big believer in boundaries, children growing up. And, you know, a big part of that is it's a way that you create safety. You create a kind of a fortress of, okay, this is how this space works. This is how the household works. These are the things we do and don't do here. And then that extends out into the world. So you know how to conduct yourself in a way that is safe and, you know, works with other people. Without wanting to insult you as an actual parent, you know, I even see that in my cat. She is much better behaved when she has clear rules, even though she tries to push back on them. If I'm strict to them, But that's the thing, maybe between boundaries and rules that you highlighted there. A lot of the time, rules that we might inherit or that might come from culture or religious aspects of our lives don't always hold up to certain scrutiny. And there's something about growing up as a young person, you notice those gaps and you push back on them and you try and kind of break through and find these elements of freedom in a way that if the rules make sense, if they're well-enforced boundaries that have been well thought through and come maybe more from your parent and, okay, how do I want to parent versus the default of a lot of I parent the way my parent did or I parent the way I think I should and it's very external, that stuff doesn't always make as much sense.
No, it can be very confusing. And I think about, you know, I think about especially young children trying to make sense of that, right? I know you were smiling when you mentioned that. I know when I was using the reflection of myself, I mentioned that. I was like, you want to understand it, but if it's not making sense, all you're asking for is to fill the gap in between. And I'm really glad you understood where I was getting at with this distinction of two, yes, very overlapping concepts, I think, rules and boundaries, noting that rules do imply safety and they are grounded in a lot of intentionality often. But I see what we miss sometimes with boundaries and when they can come too far into the rule territory is when we're not just missing intentionality, but we miss the idea that boundaries can be built out of love. And I think that's the distinction, right? So like there is this wider concept that you can love your community, of course, but generally rules are more broad sweeping, right? It's like, this is the rule that we apply here. So like you mentioned, you can go out into the world and apply it there too. You know, generally be kind to other people as you would like other people to be kind to you too. That type of notion, right? Something as simple as that. But boundaries, I think a lot of times where we get it too confused and it becomes too blurry is when we forget that boundaries have this opportunity to create them out of love. And from my particular view, I think when we are building boundaries for ourselves through self-love, it actually empowers our ability to create healthier boundaries with other people too, that can still be with a loving intention, even if we think we are stepping away from a person, disconnecting from a person, letting someone go or letting a concept go. These might seem more negative or unpleasant, but they can still all be done with love. And at the very least, if it's not love for the other person, love is not always expected for every other person in your world, at the very, very least, and at the same time, at the most, it's out of love for you.
Yeah, and I think you really highlighted that earlier where you talked about working with a lot of clients on the concept of self-love. That can be a whole new challenge. It can already be so difficult to apply that for yourself in isolation, but then boundaries is a big part of bringing that into your interpersonal relationships, is how do I maintain a level of care and respect for myself and what's best for looking after me in relation to other people? And a lot of that is boundaries. And it can feel selfish. It can, like you said, feel like we're pushing people away or that we're punishing people or we're being unfair. And yet we're often not trying to enforce anything that we would judge harshly the other person for doing.
Yes. And I love that you brought it back to the example of clients, because that is actually where a lot of the ideas and concepts that are in this book came from, is my observation, of course, in getting to work with people, the privilege of being able to work with people in their mental health and self-love journeys, and also reflecting on my experiences and what I saw in my loved ones and my friends and whatnot. And one of the things I noted out of that was that many times people were feeling the experience of having their boundaries infringed, and they know that their boundaries were violated. However, it was really hard to kind of say, well, what was the boundary that was stepped on? You know, so you feel that like something's off here. My alarms go off, but what is it? So really hard to explicate what is the boundary. And from that, I noticed that there were a lot of interpersonal boundary infractions that not always, but many times were really just because the internal boundary was already a little shaky. So every situation is unique. But I really believe that a lot of times when we think someone is crossing on our boundaries and we start to put a lot of focus on them, it can feel disempowering. And from a self-loving perspective, it's to offer ourselves the opportunity to look at how much of this, if I come back, could be a signal that my personal boundaries need work, and then will reflect in these interpersonal boundaries as well. So it can feel empowering to take that back as, oh, no wonder you don't know how to value my time. I barely value my own.
Yeah, it's so true. It's a difficult thing to learn, you know, but often these patterns, whilst it's not necessarily our fault how certain people might be treating us, we can still be complicit in either enabling them or, on the plus side, you know, correcting. And boundaries is a big part of that. Got a personal example of this I've been working on recently where I have really good intuition. A certain amount of that is innate that I've had to kind of learn to actually pay attention to. And that's part of the self-love thing of, you know, actually trusting my gut instincts in situations and trusting my own perception of kind of safety and what's going to happen next versus pushing that back and prioritizing other people's worldviews. And, you know, it's something that I've been historically a lot better at doing through work. And, you know, an example very relevant to the podcast that I've never talked about is I have really good intuition for when guests are going to cancel last minute, to the point where I can turn to my producer, Pete, or whoever I'm with that day and say, look, I know they're not going to be here today. You know, whether that was recording in person or now recording on Zoom, the way I kind of take action on that is, okay, I will drop them an email now and say, you know, I'm so looking forward to chatting to you later. Let me know if you need anything, or here's the reminder of the Zoom link, or whatever kind of polite way I can pop up to be like, speaking to you later. Oftentimes that'll prompt them to say, actually, I can't make it at that point, versus me having to go through my day and still fit it around something that I know in my heart doesn't seem like it's going to happen. And, you know, we could sort of go back and forth on how much of that is kind of innate intuition, or is it having done this work long enough that I have an unconscious ability to read context clues of maybe the way this person communicates, they seem a bit more unreliable and things like that. But I'm generally like spookily spot on. And so that's been a way of taking a lot of the power back of, okay, if I can prompt the person to tell me now rather than, you know, understandably often people put things off and they don't want to let you down. And so they're thinking of what's the perfect way to phrase this. And maybe they don't get round to putting it in an email until the last minute. And then I'm left with a hole in my day, which I could have, with more time, chosen to do something else. And that's something I've become really good at. It's been more difficult to enforce that in my personal life. We're in that time of year where we're starting to come towards Christmas. And everyone gets a bit more unreliable. You know, part of that could be the factors of the darker days and some of the pessimism and the seasonal effectiveness changes that can come in there. But also, like, it all gets hectic. And every Christmas, we think we're going to be prepared. And then we get to it and we're like, ah. And so, you know, I sort of expect more of that. And so one thing I'm trying to work on at the moment is actually applying some of that to my personal life. So if I feel like, oh, the way that this person's communicating with me, or a gut feeling I have, is maybe I'm not going to see them for that drink later. Maybe I send them the text and say, look forward to seeing you later, like I would in my work. And somehow that can still feel a bit harsh, even though it's actually in the interest of all of us to get the conversation over with and move on with our lives.
That is so fascinating. And I love that example. There, as you're going through it, I'm thinking about all these different tenets that I tried to encapsulate in the book. And I'm like, you hit on that point. So I really love hearing that. The first is even the ability to reflect and sit with the notion that I am not responsible for everyone obliging to my boundaries, to know them and to oblige them. And I don't expect that everybody will know them, all right? So I can't, it's releasing the control aspect of, I cannot control everyone else. However, with that being true, there are also a lot of places that you have influence and influence you too. So using the podcast example is a great one because, yes, you can have influence on your guests and they can have influence on you too. And I think you gave many examples of how that goes that way. So in order to protect yourself, you've learned to trust your intuition and say, I could wait and just leave it and do nothing. And then I end up with this potential deficit. Or I can nudge gently with kindness, respect, and still with the intention, I am looking forward to speaking with you, right? It's all genuine and true, but it's on behalf of you also looking out for yourself in addition to looking out for your guest. That's a good example of what I'm saying when I mention that boundaries can be built with love, right? Now, I'm not sure if we would go so far to call that love, but I'm saying there are different aspects of love, like respect and kindness. And that is a way that you're learning to be kind and respectful to yourself and the guests at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. So while it's still a boundary, we think of a boundary as a separation, right? I'm building this partition between us. That actually isn't that, right? It's actually a bridge in some ways. It still is this entity that exists between us, but it has the opportunity to connect too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And that's been a big learning for me, that I think some of the ways in which we can kind of demonize boundaries in our own heads is around, you know, does that mean telling somebody off? Does that mean you've overstepped? You can't do that again. Bad, bad friend, bad partner, bad colleague. And, you know, and that's not the case. And, you know, yeah, there are all these ways that you can kind of call somebody in versus calling them out. And so, you know, I think maybe am I a typical man? Am I just a typical human in that it can be easier to apply a lot of this stuff in our work? Because at times we can prioritize our work and the priorities that involve other people in that way versus like, okay, what do I need personally as an individual in my personal life? You know, that can be more tricky and more of a sort of practice to prioritize. And so I think a lot of it I have learned through work, but then it's like, it doesn't matter where you've learned it. In the same way I always say to people, it doesn't matter what excuse you have to get to counseling, just go. So, you know, another one I think of is, you know, there's a common kind of management style of feedback, which is kind of generic. It's the like even better if model. So rather than saying you did that wrong, don't do it again, you go with, you see what you did there, it would be even better if maybe you try doing it this way. Mm-hmm. Is a much softer approach. It can absolutely apply in our boundaries.
I really, really love that. And from a holistic aspect of wellness, which is the model that I utilize through self-love, which of course then segues into the boundaries aspect, it allows you to see yourself as human. There are some tiers of social structure that certain things will be easier and some things will be harder. There are certain dimensions of your well-being that some things will be easier and some things you'll find more challenge, right? So something more peripheral, like colleagues or podcast guests, for you seems easier to kind of apply something new. Whereas like the intricacies of more of an intimate bond, like a loved one, that might be harder. Again, to highlight, for some people, it's the opposite. I know you're the closest person in my life to me, so it's safe to practice this new boundary here versus out in my place of occupation where I might risk employment, right? So it's different for everyone, but the biggest thing to consider is if you practice it somewhere and you can see that value in another tier or dimension, you have the ability to cross that over there too. And that's part of the self-loving aspect, is I might struggle with it over here and I'm capable of it over here. Mm-hmm. So what do I learn from how this is possible over here? Because it's all still me at the mm-hmm. end of the day. And how do I use this version of me to help this other version of me too?
Mm-hmm. And what sort of advice would you have for people in finding what boundaries they should be setting?
So I love an internal approach and looking at your own dimensions of self-love, what's important to you, who you are, what you value, how you find wellness, for example, all within the 7 segments, and seeing where you value boundaries in that place. So for example, I used the example of time earlier, so let me swap over to another value of mine. I value authenticity. It's one of my core values. I've learned that it's really important for me as a person to feel like I'm being authentic, but it's also, I've learned, important for me to feel like I can be authentic with somebody else and that they can be authentic with me in turn too. So that's the personal and the interpersonal. So when I realize that for myself, it helps me realize, what are the ways that I can present as authentic? What are the obstacles that stand between me and my authenticity personally? And that then helps me build in the interpersonal layer after that. So always coming back to that personal focus. So if someone were listening to this and they wanted to start with that, and if they have not done any of the self-love work, that would be my first suggestion, is familiarize yourself with those 7 segments. And then after that, delve into more of these deeper questions of, where do you find you need boundaries based off of those self-love segments? And that will then help you on to the 3rd layer of, where do you need boundaries with other people based on the boundaries that are important to you personally?
Yes. Yes, I think that's so true. And, you know, that has been a big part of my journey with it, is finding elements of things that are my stuff. And where is the layers of, okay, what stuff there do I own and is for me to deal with in isolation? But in what ways are some parts of my stuff things that are relevant to other people? You know, so for example, I have a rejection complex that I've done a lot of work on, but at times that can still be triggered by certain things. So like interpersonally, if people change plans last minute, that affects me in the same way them cancelling a plan would be. And that is to do with kind of my background and around my feelings of safety in certain ways growing up, you know, of feeling like I belong. And so that may not be one that everyone can relate to. But I know that for me, something that really helps there, as well as my own work on it, is if somebody gives me notice and if they clearly explain why we need to reschedule, you know, and I'm thinking particularly like whether, you know, it's in my friendships or my dating life, this is where this comes up the most. And so that's something that, you know, I know for me, I need that bit of extra kind of grace from people. And so there's ways that I can kind of encourage that. So whether that's, you know, speaking up when I know, okay, I need a bit more information here. What happened? How come you only told me now? Is everything okay? There's still ways that you can show the care, like you've said, and like inquire and show interest versus being like, yeah, it was rotten that you did this. Explain yourself. And, you know, but then also, you know, encourage people to kind of maybe bear some of that stuff in mind of like, I would really appreciate it if you could kind of give me a bit more notice next time.
Yes, this is a really wonderful example, because I'm thinking of early on in the book, I addressed some common reasons why we may struggle with designing healthy boundaries. And one of it is like, we have stuff there. So it's that we have a history of, for some reason, we have our own wounds in that department. That's challenging. And sometimes it's not even as deep as like, this is my big thing. Sometimes it's just, I've experienced this before, right? Last week, like I'm thinking, even if we were to make it a little bit more innocuous, say you didn't have any of those deeper things, but today I canceled, the next day someone canceled, and the day after that someone canceled. Even that quick succession would just cause you by Friday to say, what the heck, right? What is going on here? This doesn't feel good. Even if that Thursday cancellation says, you know, I'm so sorry, I have an emergency, and it's true. It's just human nature after those other instances to say, I get that you have an emergency, and I'm also frustrated because this keeps happening to me, right? So there's a bunch of different reasons why it has that like sequential challenge. But I love that you also allow this like letting in process And I think that's a big part of designing healthy boundaries. It's one thing if you know, okay, all week people have canceled on me, or even deeper, I have this bigger rejection wound, regardless of what it is how much of me could benefit if I were to explain this to someone, right? So I'm thinking of like an intimate partner, perhaps it's safe to say, I've really been noticing that I struggle with this notion that people are rejecting me. And you might then say, based on that, I wonder if there's small changes we can make in our relationship so I can feel more safe and that you can feel more safe with me too, and that we can be more cohesive there. But that's an intimate relationship, right? Then you have more of like the collegial, more general realm. And it might just be something like that bump in the email that you mentioned of, hey, I'm looking forward to speaking with you later, right? It could just be that with no explanation, right? That's not warranted to divulge these vulnerable aspects of you, but it still is you standing up for you at the same time and abiding by that boundary yourself.
Yes. And before we start to wrap up, the one last kind of area I notice that people can find really difficult often is boundaries around information. That there can be such a kind of innate pressure we might feel if people are asking us questions that we don't want to answer. And I know certain things, like I don't tend to talk about my age publicly, and I don't drink. And people often have questions around that. And neither of those things are centered around huge traumas, but they are very common questions. And at a certain point, you're like, maybe I don't want to answer. Maybe I want to kind of shut down the conversation, but you can still feel that pressure of like, I don't want to be rude. Or it feels, you know, like I'm closing somebody out to not, you know, answer a question about why I don't drink, which is actually very boring. Do you know what I mean? I don't like talking about it because there's no big plot story. There's no mental health angle. You know, there's just a combination of a few reasons. And I've not found enough reasons to drink to change the behavior. It's, you know, it's as boring and, you know, weighing scales as that. And yet, you know, of course, it is a very common reaction that people are like, oh, how come?
Yes. The word that stands out to me when you're exploring that is I don't want to be rude, right? And it's interesting because rude implies the perception that you're breaking a wider social rule, or again, social boundary. And that's a unique aspect that I try to get to into the book as well. While the book focuses on taking back your power and looking at your personal boundaries first, it acknowledges we don't live in our own singular worlds, right? We are a social species. So we have boundaries with strangers, people who are walking down the same street as us, right? So there are general social beliefs that some things are okay to speak about and some things are not. It's not okay to talk about your feelings, but it's okay to ask someone why they won't have a cocktail, right? It's interesting, these general social rules essentially apply a wider boundary that goes, in these two instances, age and drinking, go against your personal boundary, right? So that's what causes that friction there. It doesn't even have to be something big. It's just, oh, the world thinks it's okay to ask this. And I don't love talking about this. This is a more protective realm for me, whether it's not that deep of a meaning or a very deep meaning. It's just, you're going against the social grain there. So it causes that rift every time. And one of the things I highlighted in the book is, it's not about convincing everybody that we shouldn't ask why people are not drinking. It's more about knowing that question will be asked and how do I come back to honor my own boundaries when it is.
And I know certainly for myself, you know, the answer has been like in the first instance with age, I find ways to wriggle out of the question or I make jokes about it. And we move on and we change the topic. And then with drinking, you know, sometimes I give a longer answer and unsurprisingly that person finds the answer boring anyway, or I give a short answer. I just pick one of the reasons and I'm like, today I'm going to give that one. And you know, I think it's like you say, it's not necessarily the specifics around what that question is so much as, you know, how it makes us feel and that we have a right to kind of hold on to information, whether or not other people would agree with that being something you don't want to talk about. You know, they're still going to be intrigued, but that doesn't mean we have to satiate their intrigue.
Yep.
And so on that note, we will start to wrap up. I've so enjoyed chatting to you. We were saying off air how much we both love boundaries, that whilst they can be tricky, they do get easier to implement over time. And so you can get to a point where they become quite fun to be like, okay, I'm going to be a little sociologist and we're going to see if I start sort of encouraging this in how people interact with me, how's it going to play out? And it's lovely to see when that does work.
Yes, it's all practice. So it does get easier over time.
Yes. And you know all about practice because you don't just write great books, you write great practical books. And so in the latest one, like many previous iterations, you have reflections throughout, you have little bits of work that people can do. And so it's like a therapeutic experience within the reading that you get to apply straight away to your life. So would you mind sharing a little bit more about this new book?
Yeah. So in this book, very similar to the others, it was very important to me to help others fill this gap that I saw so prominently, but to not preach a method to people. There are some things in there that I hit on as tenets, like common obstacles to designing healthy boundaries, or even the model of starting first with your personal boundaries and then building on. There are some things I feel passionate about, but in my approach, I found that it's really important to be individualistic. So for that reason, the book kind of has these tenets, and there's a big preface and information about boundaries early at the onset. And then throughout it, it has a lot of reflective, practical components, because I want people to use it to do the work, not just be inspired or reflect on or consider the work. I want them to do the work. It's designed in a way that you can do it independently, especially if you have done a lot of your healing journey already. However, like the other books, it's designed that you can bring it into therapy, that you can do a group work together, whether that's group therapy or even just a bunch of friends together who are working on the same things, trying to support one another, which I think would be such a beautiful experience. And I hope a lot of people use it in that more communal way. It does also address this more cyclical nature of boundaries, of, you know, kind of recognizing that you need them, moving into kind of creating them, and then how do we like enforce or assert them, and kind of cycling through that, which I don't know, never felt clear to me before, but it seems like it makes a lot of sense. Before writing this, it felt like boundaries were just, you make them, they're there, you set them in stone, you sign, and you live, you're stuck with them forever. And I think that we, especially as healing people, we are ever evolving and learning. So wouldn't it make sense to be able to integrate that knowledge and improve the boundaries over time? So that model is introduced in the book as well.
I love that. Yeah, it's an ongoing process, definitely. But it can be one that, you know, we see these incremental bits of joy from, you know. Maybe I've watched too much Marie Kondo recently. It's sparking joy, this whole concept. And so thank you for chatting boundaries with me. And we will wrap up there.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.